bring in Mark Shapiro, President and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays. Mark, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Good perch up here. Like, we're in radio land, but we're looking out over the groundskeeper watering the infield. Gentle breeze.
Yeah,
that's
this doesn't get old, man.
28 no, spring this. Trainings, and it doesn't, you know, walking into the stadium in the morning and thinking, you know, I'm fortunate enough that this is my job. You got to be kidding me.
Yeah,
you know,
and of course we've got Brunt in the suit.
Darn
which
right.
Is just the,
yeah, that's
which was off putting. I mean,
I noticed. I was thinking when you said it's the Jeff Blair show that it's a hostile takeover, Stephen. It's the Stephen Brunt show.
Darn right. Morning. Yeah, dressed for the other medium today. Yes,
exactly. Well, we are in this broadcast booth. It's lovely. Had a lot of great games called here. Of course, Tom and Jerry, and now Mike and Ben calling games. And the question I have to ask you is, next year are we going to have a different broadcast booth? How exactly – the first question a lot of people have asked us, you know, what's going on with the status of the spring training facility and facilities, plural, and what should we expect next year when we come down here?
Yeah, there's a meeting going on as we speak, kind of the final design page turn with the builder, the architect, you know, our staff here. You know, a variety of different people that are kind of, you know, honing in. And today the construction fencing is going up in the minor league complex. So we're preparing to break ground, and it's going to be an all-out sprint from the day spring training finishes to get us ready for the middle of February next year. And it'll be a different stadium, although the stadium will largely be some cosmetic and architectural changes. We're spending quite a bit of money here, but there's just not that much you can do. We'll have an entirely new building, 110,000 square foot, state-of-the-art rehabilitation and training center over at the minor league complex. All of our operation will shift there, everything other than playing games. So where we're sitting right now will strictly be, and we'll likely be doing this interview over there next year, but where we're sitting right now will strictly be where we play 15 spring training games and where our Florida State League team plays, and that's really it.
For the fans who come down here, you know, we come down here every spring to spring training. This place has – look, I've been coming here for a long time. It hasn't really changed that much in the last, you know, 30 years.
Right.
I don't go back beyond that. But how will the fan experience be different here next year, Mark?
Well, there's going to be the ability to walk around the entire field. It's hard to imagine right now because all you see beyond the outfield fence are trees, some a school of buildings, but we're going to create a boardwalk that enables you to walk from the concourse all the way around. We're going to create a tiki bar and some other areas that fans could have some different types of entertainment, different types of seating, obviously new concessions, new seats. Things like that, and certainly a lot of cosmetic changes as well. It's going to feel different, different ways to watch the game, different ways to interact with the players.
So some of the kind of stuff we've seen, some of the other facilities, so you can kind of picnic at the game, you can sit in the bar and watch the game, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to lose the old school spring training feel here or really at the training complex. I mean, this is really one of the last complexes that's right dropped in the middle of a neighborhood and kind of has that old world spring training feel to it. It's the only place the Blue Jays have ever trained, and I think there's I put some value in that.
Yeah.
You know, we are really embraced by the community here. It's a small community, but it's really the you know what the town features has grown dramatically even in the four springs that I've been here. It's right on the water. It's a great place to visit, extremely close to the Phillies and Yankees and close to an airport. All those things are huge positives. So we're going to get the benefit of kind of the old school tradition of spring training, but with all the modern amenities. And in all candor, and I think I've said this before, the place that's going to impact the Blue Jays the most and hopefully impact wins the most is really going to be in the training
over
complex.
At the Maddox Center. Yeah.
You've been down here for 4 days now. Walked around an awful lot, seen a lot of things. We have been surprised by just how different this spring training has felt in terms of the logistics, the tone. Steven uses the word vibe, and you know, players have said the same thing. Have you been surprised as you walk around here at just, and this isn't to, I'm not criticizing John Gibbons here, but have you been surprised at just how different it is? Like, does it feel that different to you, Mark?
Maybe because it's you know, we're immersed in it, and you know, we're not comparing to last year or the year before. And also, I would say it's more consistent with what's been happening in the minor leagues. It's comfortable, probably just because of the warmth and authenticity of Charlie and the humility that he's got. I think it really starts there. If you think about Charlie Montoyo, he's a guy that, and any given day, and I said this the other day with Tim and Sid, but if you walk out on the field, you're going to have a hard time finding him. Not because he's not sitting on the side with his hands on his hips and his arms crossed. He's out there hitting fungos. He's throwing BP. He's talking to every player on the field. And that's really just a symbol or a reflection of the way he views the job. It's not about him. It's about the staff. It's about the organization. It's about the players. You know, he brings a warmth and authenticity in leadership style that I think makes it just easier to be in the environment. At the same time, you know, when we lost those games in the beginning, Charlie was like, these guys got to understand we still expect to compete. It's not about winning and losing, but we expect to compete. So I feel like that's kind of what Tito brought, you know, when I was exposed to him, is it's this guy that expected to win every day, but when we didn't win, it was okay. He understood the nature of the game, and that's a fine line, because the managers that burn to win and create, they burn out players and burn out themselves and burn out staffs. The guys that are so laid back that you don't really feel like it, you know, do we care if we win? You know, that's not good, right? And Charlie has that balance of, hey, he wants to win. You know, don't mistake his, you know, niceness and his nice guy, you know, approach, his lack of competitiveness. But, you know, he also understands the nature of the game and understands that you got to have fun, you got to have joy, you know, every single day. And it starts with him.
The fun thing's interesting, because that is a word that has come up over and over. Guys seem to be, I was here around when the players reported too, and so a lot of this stuff was new. It is being done differently. It's organized differently as a camp. So there were guys, it was kind of, especially with the veteran guys, it's still kind of trying to understand what the coaches wanted them to do. But there's also been some kind of, you know, like very different stuff in, you know, away from baseball. They had a hypnotist come in the clubhouse.
There's an improv group coming in tomorrow.
They've got a comedy group in the morning, right?
Right.
So you guys are going to play the Phillies in Clearwater tomorrow. A squad is going to play the Phillies in Clearwater. But before that, they're going to bring a comedian or improv group into the clubhouse.
Right.
That's different. Maybe it's not different other places, but it's very different here.
Yeah, it's a team building. I mean, I think there's the understanding, and it's something that's maybe so overlooked because people aren't thinking about it. But it's 162 games in 186 days, and we're down here for 40 before that, and the goal is to get to play another 3 weeks after that. And you know, you're living with these guys. You know, you are living with these people, and so you hear us talk about teammate and environment and culture, and those aren't just buzzwords. It's that efficiency, that ease, that happiness, that enjoyment of being around people. If you are not happy being around those people, think about the days I just mentioned.
That's a long year.
That's a long year. I know we live in a world of, you know, analytically and objectively measuring everything. I can't give you an analytical and objective measurement about that, but if you're miserable showing up to work every day, whether you're working on a dock or you're working in a baseball clubhouse, you get a much less chance of being good at your job, no matter what that job is, whether it's playing baseball or doing something else. So I think the thought is, you know, enjoying where you're coming, liking who you're working with, are really important to being successful and being a championship organization. So the exercises, the things you're talking about, they're just small things meant to foster the enjoyment.
Go ahead, Jeff.
I was just going to ask you, almost bookkeeping or whatever out of the way, but one of the questions a lot of people are asking about, and again, we'll get to the phone lines and the text in a minute, Vladdy and the injury to Vladdy and the concerns about concerns about his weight. I mean, the stuff people have talked about. How does the organization view where he is right now in his development in terms of that, in terms of taking care of himself and being durable?
I guess I would say if Vladdy's name was Jim you know, Stein, and he was not a high profile guy, but a prospect, a guy we liked in the organization. This would be a player we'd say whose bat tool is far outpaces the development of the other areas, aspects of his game. That, you know, he is an extremely exciting prospect who has done things going back to the objective analytical side that you don't see very often. In fact, you probably have not seen in very, if at all, in the last 10 years in the game.
Yeah.
So that you are extremely excited about the offensive profile and what he brings to the game. And then you'd look at the rest of the player and you'd say, well, the defense, the base running, the routines and preparation, and that's conditioning. Mm-hmm. Learning how, for a 19, 20-year-old, how to handle the major league life, and that is, you know, the fear, worry, and doubt, the pressures, the abundance of food, the, you know, the travel, the meal money, the money and the trappings of fame. And you say, what if you took any 19-year-old and had the entire baseball world know who he is and start to project upon him the expectations of greatness, whether it be teammates, umpires, opponents, fans, front office, everybody, how well equipped are you to handle that? And you'd say the things that we're going through are a very natural part of development. I've seen them, you know, in a 28-year career. I've seen them with other players many, many times. CeCe Sabathia, going to be a Hall of Famer. Jim Thome is a Hall of Famer. Manny Ramirez, with his background, right, might not be, but certainly Hall of Fame statistics. Very similar things with all those guys who went on to have great careers. So there are speed bumps that come up. How the player handles those speed bumps and how the organization helps him process those setbacks and those challenges become defining of what that player's career is. So I would view it as a natural part of his development happening on an unnatural stage.
Yeah, well, that's
that's
now
a good way to put it.
The idea. So, but in terms of where we go from here, because now we know that's obviously got to rehab this injury, and he will be ready to play at some point in the next 6 weeks or something along those lines. But you know, a lot of people thought would have talked about Vladdy and said, you know, his bat would have played in the major leagues when he was 18 or 17, maybe. Like, he's a very sophisticated hitter, and you know, not just a kind of a you know, a physical phenomenon, but a very schooled hitter for a guy his age.
Yeah.
And that, can a guy like that, obviously he has dominated in the minor leagues. All of those things you talk about, becoming a complete player, learning the major league life, can any of that be learned in the minor leagues for him at this stage, though?
Some of that's going to have to happen up here. You're inevitably going to have to finish a guy like that in the major league level, some of that. But I think you still can, a lot of what I've talked about can still either be taught or communicated and expected at the minor league level. And it has to be done with a sense of urgency, understanding that, you know, we're already on a condensed time frame. That's the funny thing about this conversation. This guy's already moved at a faster pace than every other player would move. The other players who were signed with him are in A-ball right now.
Yeah.
You know, so there is no comparison. We are moving him extremely rapidly at a pace that will not definitively allow him to be finished product when he gets to the big leagues. Yet I still feel like, as a development guy, that the burden for us is to try to do as good a job as possible to finish off as much as possible, knowing we will still have to do some things up here.
Yeah, but I guess the bird leaves the nest at some point, and you have to be, like, not everything is going to be, he's not going to be a complete product.
There's no way. Yeah, we're not expecting that.
No, and that's
impossible.
But that would be the same with most players, wouldn't it?
That would be the same with most players, because you can't simulate the major leagues in AAA.
Yeah.
So, and that's why we get back, and I can take this, I'm not trying to avoid the Vladdy conversation, but we can make this universal with where we are as a team, in that, you know, the final part of what we're trying to accomplish here is we started halfway through last year transitioning young players, Jansen, Barucki, you know, numerous other guys, McKinney, numerous other guys at the big leagues. Then there's a process where the league will adjust to those guys, and then those guys have to adjust back. It takes, on average, looking historically at the game, about 3 years to get an understanding and an idea of what you have, of what a player's average expected performance can be in the prime of his career. So, you know, it takes a while. And I've often said, trying to explain to ownership in Cleveland in the past, listen, development is not linear, meaning it's not a smooth curve. If you just looked at like a graph, development just doesn't gradually go like this. So if you get excited about a guy, don't expect him to just keep getting better. It's a zigzag that hopefully if you plotted that graph over time look like a gradual increase until you reach the
even for the best
career.
Guys, right?
Even for the best guys. So it's really hard when you have 162 points of data, 162 pieces of feedback, not to get emotional, not to get up and down, not to declare a guy a great player one night and a disaster the next night. Teoscar is a great example of that, right? We were, go back and read the media, go back and listen to the talk show tapes when he first came up. We were declaring him to be, this guy is incredible. We're excited. Last year, if you go back and read the, you know, the comments on his defense and him as a player when he was striking out, we're ready to jump off and abandon him. Well, he's probably neither. He wasn't that, you know, MVP, and he's not the disaster. This is a part of the development process, and it requires patience. It requires toughness, frankly, you know, to believe in the player and find the players you want to believe in, provide the opportunity through the ups and the downs, continue to teach, develop, which I think Charlie and this staff are really well equipped to teach and develop, and you ultimately will be rewarded often with players who maybe you might have given up on along the way.
Yeah.
416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590, 590-5590 on the text line. Your chance to talk to Mark Shapiro, president and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays. Rocky and Markham, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. What's up, Rocky?
Good morning, gentlemen. Feels like an annual tradition that I'm talking to you, Mark, for the third year in a row. And
good
you
to
know,
talk to you, Rocky.
Hey, good to talk to you as well. I really appreciate what you do. You know, we know that the Blue Jays are still in that rebuilding or transition phase, and I'm pretty interested to see what happens this season, because we all know that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is the guy, and he's going to be the focal point whenever he gets called up. But I think Bichette should be in the conversation. I think that the way he's playing in spring training right now, I'm not surprised, because I think that he has power like his father, Dante Bichette, and I think that it's going to be interesting to see how it goes. With that being said, I remember I mentioned a couple prospects last year with Warmoth and Zach Jack. I have a couple of different ones that I've been looking at to see how you're going to have it done. One guy under the radar is Cal Stevenson, and I know that he was drafted this past year, and he seems like he's rising up, and it's very interesting how he develops in the outfield. Another one is Ryan Noda, and I know that he has raw power, and he has a walk ratio, and with those type of guys, we know that there's core prospects. We know that they're going to come up, and we know about those guys. And when I mention those guys, how would they fit into this system and going forward? Those under-the-radar guys, how would you fit those guys into the Blue Jays roster long-term?
Yeah. So, Rocky, let me kind of use Noda, Stevenson, Warmoth. I mean, the other day I was down in the minor leagues and there were eight shortstops out there, and it was Groshans and Kevin Smith and, you know, Jimenez and Orelvis Martinez, who we signed last year, and Logan Warmoth. And I was thinking, holy cow, this is, I sat down with Gil Kim yesterday, our farm director, and kind of thinking about how we provide those guys opportunities to play and to ensure they're all developed at the proper pace. And let me kind of use your comments to make two points. The first is, you know, when you get to the point that you're 30, 40, and that's where kind of Noda and Stevenson are, down deep in your system, and you're still talking about guys that are interesting, guys that could be, you know, players for us down the road, you know, if they continue to develop, you're at a good spot, because nobody is that smart. I'm not that smart. Ross isn't that smart. You know, no matter how smart, you know, maybe other organizations pound their chests and say they are as baseball guys, nobody knows ultimately who are going to be the, you know, the players. Every now and then there's the 2%, like a Vladimir Guerrero Jr. or maybe a Bo Bichette, where it's very clear to everyone that watches that these guys are pretty special and are going to be major league players. But the rest of it, you know, when you get in kind of that middle bandwidth, you know, you end up with surprises, and injuries happen. You know, good surprises happen and disappointments happen. So having a very deep, you know, farm system, having a lot of depth, having a lot of guys you are excited about that you think are interesting if one or two things happen, is a really good place to be. And I can tell you, for a Blue Jay fan, that, you know, where we are now is a good place. You know, we've got an extremely deep farm system that, if you know, we continue to be patient and play out, will be a productive major league, the foundation of a productive, you know, championship caliber major league team. That's where you got to trust the process. You know, you hear that word thrown out there a lot these days, often made fun of when it comes into context with my talking, but that's okay, because it is a process, and it is, because it's about human beings, and you can't force the development, and we're going to stay consistent to it, because I've seen it, you know, be rewarded in the past. The second piece is, you know, you asked about how do we fit those guys in, and what I would tell you is the best players make decisions for us. So Cal Stevenson had a very productive year, but was a little old for his level last year. Ryan Noda was an undervalued guy out of the draft who's had plate discipline and some power. Both those guys are just, they're awarded. They made the decision to get the next opportunity. Then they'll get an opportunity, and they'll have to go out and produce and show that productivity again. If they do that repeatedly, they're going to put themselves in the conversation for the major league team in a year or two. And ultimately, if they do that, start doing that at AAA, then they're going to earn an opportunity up here at some point. So, you know, besides that 2% of players that are obvious to everybody, the rest of the players make decisions for us with the way they go out, compete. They go out, you know, commit to the preparation and the process, and ultimately they produce as an outcome of those efforts.
We've got one from the text line from Mike in Brampton. It wants to know, what result are you looking for this year? What would you need to see to consider this a successful season?
Well, I mean, I think it's the outcomes and the results. I guess I would expect us to go out and compete every day with no limitation in mind, either, you know, from what we can do as an outcome. But I would hope that by the end of the year that we have an emerging core of talent that we feel both subjectively and objectively are capable of being the core of a championship team. We've transitioned a lot of those players, and a lot of those players are starting to establish themselves at the major league level. But I guess more than anything, Jeff, I would say I'd hope that be obvious to people other than just us. I hope that would be fans could walk in, look around the diamond, and say, "Man, these guys are going to be really good. This is fun to watch. Like, these guys, the way they play, and the talent they've got are both fun to watch."
Mark, how much of it is a testament to what you guys set out to do when you first came in, you and the group, what the Buffalo Bisons are going to look like this year? You know, because they're not going to be any 4A guys there this year, right?
No, we got a lot of prospects there. I you know, that's
because you talked about depth and the depth of prospects, not just having two or three guys.
Yeah, I mean, that's a point of encouragement. That's a reason to have some belief in your nights of doubt, you know.
Yeah.
But in the end, it's still all about results up here. You know, I think you got to be moving with a sense of urgency to get results at the major league level. The accolades in the minor leagues, the number 3, 4, or 5 ranked farm system, all those things. Listen, those matter, because if you look objectively at the best top 5 ranked farm systems over the last 20 years, that results in 8 more wins in 3 years. That's a positive thing. 8 more wins is not going to get us where we need to be, but it's going to get us a big step towards where we need to be. So I would say that stuff in the nights of fear, worry, and doubt, which I have many of those nights, and we will all have those this year at times, those things are really important to reinforce the belief in what we're doing, because the danger, Stephen, in sport in general, the danger is emotion and momentum-based decision-making.
Yeah.
You know, that if you have a plan and you commit to that plan and then you start to doubt the plan, and you abandon it and you reinvent it, basically what you're doing is starting over again. So it's another 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's another 2 years. Or you take a shortcut and you don't build, you know, you get maybe a burst, but it's not sustainable and it's not meaningful. So I think that those points, that what Buffalo will look like, what New Hampshire will look like, you know, what Dunedin will look like, the depth that we just talked about with Rocky, you know, mentioning those two names that most people have probably never heard, and knowing they're just a reflection of 30, 40, 50 deep in the system. Those are the things that, okay, we are headed in the direction. You know, you need to tell yourself that.
Our friend Jeff Passan of ESPN is reporting that there is some sort of agreement in place with the Players Association and MLB regarding a few rules changes, actually more less rules changes and more changes to some of the you know, dynamics, if you want to call it that, of the trade market, things of that nature. Obviously, I don't think you can comment on that, but I did want to ask you about, you know, we're seeing, for example, this morning, Colin McHugh the Astros on Twitter. Eloy Jimenez gets sent down, and Colin McHugh basically calls out the White Sox. There seems to be a negative tone to the labor situation in baseball right now, as it, I think, focusing mainly in the free agent market and service time issues. Is it something that concerns you?
Yes. I mean, because I've always looked at myself as I'm not an owner and I'm not a player. I'm mm-hmm. someone who loves the game and is kind of in the middle. And so I hate to see anything that, has any potential negative connotation for us being on the field and playing the game and getting away from what makes it so special and so great. So when I hear focus and attention, anger, contention, I just kind of feel like the pie is big enough and we always can figure out how to share that pie between owners and players. Yet I do understand. I am sympathetic. Anytime, and you can think about political systems, and anytime there's a lack of understanding, anytime people don't feel like they feel some disconnect with what's going on around them, and it's not suitably explained and they feel disconnected and even, maybe disenfranchised a little bit. The net result in that is usually anger, frustration, lashing out. And I think what we've seen from players is the game has changed. Speaking as the graybeard, in the room, when I came in, literally.
There's a couple of us here,
daughter points out to me all the time. When I came in, we made trades with stat books on our laps. The only three pieces of information we had were scouting reports, media guides, and stat books. And that was how we made trades. If we made trades that way today, we would definitively be getting destroyed and getting our tails kicked every single day of the week by the Houston Astros, by the Chicago Cubs, by the Los Angeles Dodgers, by some of the most successful teams out there that are, taking all the information and have a never-ending thirst, for information. So what's happened is, Jeff, the way players are valued has changed, because the nature of front offices have changed. Players are not devalued. I think they feel devalued, But the middle class of free agency, which are players at a certain age group, front offices have a better understanding of being able to frame an expectation and frame a value of what to expect from those players. And they frankly know that, hey, a young player for a much less, maybe with a lot more upside, may be able to offer me exactly what those veteran major league players were. So when I came in, we often paid players for the name on the back of their jersey, which means for their past performance. Mm-hmm. And there was an expectation that if you achieved a certain level, you would just get paid for your past performance, not for what you expected to be done. And now we're thinking more carefully, more precisely, with more information about paying players for their future performance. And that's hard for certain guys to understand because they work their tails off to get to the point that they earn free agency. What has to change is not us saying, well, we'll reward you anyway, even though your performance is declining. What has to ultimately change is a window to collectively bargain a change in the compensation agreement. Yeah. And I think that mm-hmm. will change at some point.
Although, boy, that seems like a complicated, tricky business, Mark. I keep thinking about what that would look like. And I understand the players. I understand a veteran player saying, hang a second, this is kind of what I was promised. I paid my dues. I apprenticed in the minor leagues and got paid no money. Teams controlled me for 6 or 7 years. It's some of that in an ARB system. And now this is the point in my career where I'm going to get paid. This is where we get, and then I'm just waiting for the offers, and that's what my agent told me.
Right.
This is when the offers all pile in and we just decide which one we want. I understand their frustration. I understand the rationale on the other side, exactly, that it's, a bunch of people seeing things the same way and not a lot of emotional buys being made, and maybe owners not in going to say, you have to sign that guy
It's not, I understand it as well, and yeah. I appreciate it.
I just don't know how you...
Son of an agent, by the way.
Well, you are, yeah.
Yeah, so
But how do you... Tell me what the system is that makes everybody happy here.
It's how it's negotiated. What it looks like, I can't tell you, but it basically has to compensate younger players.
Yes,
more.
It does. Right.
That's it.
Yeah.
And it's that simple. And it's not, it's a system that needs to change to recognize where the value is, placed for the front offices. The other thing I'd say is, You know, this is the misrepresentation. The misrepresentation is owners are pocketing this money and teams don't want to compete. And listen, man, there's nobody in these jobs that doesn't want to compete. And there's, you know, there are not owners that are sitting there with this open strategy to line their pockets with money. And frankly, the amount of money being dumped into the player development systems, being dumped into analytics, being dumped into technology, and, you know, the size of front offices, the understanding that you can gain a competitive advantage through so many different ways than just, you know, the players in the field. There's a huge investment. I'm talking multiple millions of dollars of investments being made at trying to find incremental advantages throughout analytics, development, coaching, teaching, scouting, all those different things. And so it's just we're shifting where we're spending the money, and there's a frustration and anger from veteran players about that. And I'm not at all suggesting that that's not justifiable. I'm not suggesting that they shouldn't feel that way. I'm just suggesting that we instead try to be constructive and focusing where we shift, you know, how that manifests itself. And it ultimately, Steven's going to have to end up in a different system.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, but it's the getting there that kind of frightens people, because that's, you know, people who remember work stoppages.
It's the getting there that frightens me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm not an owner. Trust me, I am not a player. Either one of those two things, never be mistaken for either one of those, my bank account or my athleticism. And so I'm firmly, you know, I am much like you. You know, I love the game. I'm much like Jeff. I love the game of baseball. And the roots of me working in it are from that passion and that love of the game. And, you know, it would hurt me to think that we can't divide the pie, you know.
Let's go to Tom in Toronto. You're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. You're on with Mark Shapiro. What's up, Tom?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
Mr. Atkins, I thank you for...
It's Mark Shapiro, not Mr. Atkins.
Sorry?
That's okay. You go ahead and ask the question.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Shapiro.
That's all right.
All right. Mark, my wife and I have been Blue Jay fans since, forever, and we were there when in 85 when Bell fell to his knees and they won their first division title, and the Seagulls were flying around Exhibition Stadium. And we've seen many players come and go, and we understand that it's a business, and the analytics seems to be taking over in baseball from a fan's perspective, versus the chemistry. And part of that for us this spring was the letting go of Mr. Russell, Martin Russell, in a position that seems to be pretty, not very deep, a very important position, catching on a team. And first of all, he's Canadian. And secondly, very experienced in his role. And we thought that from a chemistry point of view that he would have been incredible on the team to support these young catchers coming up. So I will just hang up and listen to your response to that. We just wonder what the process was in relation to that. Thank you very much, Mr. Shapiro.
Thank you. Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah.
Well, they're calling you Mark instead of Ross, of course. I should have known that.
Yeah. All right. No problem.
Take care, Tom.
No problem, Tom. Yeah, appreciate your perspective. And, you know, man, there's a lot within your comments. It feels like you have a lot of emotions and feelings kind of watching the game evolve. I promise you that the game has not shifted to analytics. Analytics are a part of decision-making in the game. The game is still played by people. It's what makes it beautiful. There will never, ever, ever, I promise you, be a computer that spits out decisions. There still will always be a human element. Chemistry, makeup, we spend more time than you could ever imagine thinking about, you know, how does a team outperform the expectations that analytically or objectively, and those things always come back to leadership, teammate, culture, environment, atmosphere. So while I will not give you a specific answer on Russell, because, you know, we can never do that. We can never tell you, you know, Russell, hey, at this point in his career, he wants to win and he's earned that right. And you know, we have three young catchers that we feel good about, and, you know, and Jansen McGuire and Luke Maley and other guys beneath them, by the way, that we feel good about as well, that we need to keep moving. So, you know, yes, we did value Russell, and yes, we did, you know, place a value on his leadership and on his presence and on the fact he's Canadian. But in the end, you know, the value of continuing to provide opportunities to the other guys offset the value of those things, and we felt like it was time to move on. And Russell deserved the chance to go at this point in the twilight of his career to play for a team that was in a different window of competitiveness. So, A, don't ever assume, and please don't assume, that we are devaluing human beings and character and leadership and environment. In fact, I'm not sure you'll find another front office that spends more time thinking about those things and talking about those things, too. We just talked about it earlier on this show. And B, in every decision, we're always kind of weighing the balance of those dynamics versus talent and trying to come out with the right balance and overall team environment.
And one of the reasons, one of the things I find interesting, it seems to me that nothing shows the commitment of this organization to player development and to building from within more than the fact that Danny Jansen, a Blue Jays guy, he's being handed the keys to this essentially as the everyday catcher. Like, that to me shows a commitment to a process. 24-year-old catcher is going to be kind of the eyes and ears, the brains on the field.
Yeah, and he carries himself in a way that is beyond, his age, and we'll expect a lot from him, but we're going to have to continue to commit, pick the guys to commit to. And when you commit to a guy, I always get back to Pat Gillick, just to pull up a Blue Jay name. When I was a first year GM, I sat in the booth in Cleveland talking to Pat, and I looked up to him immensely. He was one of the guys that was kind of, as I thought about being a young GM, I want to be like Pat Gillick someday, and was picking Pat's brain. And Pat, is a guy that is so incredibly humble and, never really bludgeons you with what he knows and is very comfortable with silence. And so I intentionally asked the open-ended question, Pat, what do you look for in players? And, he let it sit there and marinate for a little while before he answered me, and he came up with just a very, blanket statement, Mark, I look for dependable, reliable players. And I kind of felt like, oh, man, that's a disappointing answer. And then I thought about it as I drove home that night, and I've thought about it almost every day that I've been in this job since, and I think Pat's 100% right that you can't, you're never going to mitigate against slumps, injuries. You can't ever resent players for those things. They're going to go up and down like we talked about earlier. Things are going to happen you can't control. What you can make a decision on, who you commit those jobs to, like a Danny Jansen or a Ryan Barucki, is the way the guy gets out of his car, how he talks to the parking lot attendant. And then when he talks to Stephen Brunt waiting to do an interview, how he handles that part of his job. And when he walks into the clubhouse, maybe most importantly, how he talks to the guy in the lockers next to him on either side. And when he walks into the training room, how he looks at that. Is he just doing what he thinks he should do, or is he thinking about, I'm doing everything possible to keep myself on the field? And when he walks in and watches video, is he watching video with a purpose? When he takes batting practice, is he just going through the rote exercise of batting practice, or is he taking batting practice with the intent to get better that day? And so, those are the kinds of things that, to me, was what Pat was saying. Dependability and reliability is the person it is the teammate it is. And circling back to Tom's question, we are obsessively thinking about that, Tom. We are thinking about, who are the players that, control the controllable? Who are the players that, in Pat Gillick's words, are the dependable, reliable player?
Dependable, yeah. We've got a couple minutes here, right, Jeff?
Yep.
Just one matter of business, Mark, I should bring it up. The attendance question this year. There are tickets available for the home opener. That's an unusual situation at this stage. Is that worrisome? It will, there will be chatter about it, I guarantee you. What does that mean in the big picture?
I think it means that it's a reflection of where we are competitively. It's a reflection of the last 2 years. It frankly, for all but maybe three or four major league teams, so 26 out of 30 teams, it's the exact same circumstance that every team goes through, which is, when you go through down cycles of competitiveness, when you come off 2 years that are disappointing for us and for our fans, like the last 2 years, that there will be some slide in attendance. I still feel like two things. One, we are not far from the backdrop of what 16 and 17 and the second half of 15 represented, which is, a strong example of the level of support both in the city and throughout the country when we do win, what that looks like. And secondly, even last year with a very disappointing team, still to find ourselves in the middle of the pack, and I still expect us to be towards the middle in all of Major League Baseball with a club that is not, necessarily, where most fans want to see us. So I guess I'd say, Stephen, to be concise, when we win, there's no place better. Even when we're not the team we really want to be, we're still in a pretty good spot. That reflects the depth of our market, the power of our market, and makes it one of the best places for Major League Baseball.
Mark, listen, we really appreciate you joining us this morning. As I said, you know, I understand how busy spring training is, busy time of year for everybody. It really seems like it's gone fast this year. You're hearing Charlie talk about 2 weeks left. I had to kind of shake my head. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, good to be with you guys. Look forward to following up, and it's going to be a very fun, exciting, interesting year to kind of watch things evolve and develop. And like I said, I hope it's obvious to everybody else what we are, what makes us bullish, you know, on the Blue Jay organization.